Cake Week in association with Asda and a whole heap of other goodies. And certainly to address the notion of to bake or not to bake, yes, believe it or not, there are certain folk who actually would fake their baking. Unbelievable. Certainly that could never be said about the ace author of the fabulous recipes from a normal mum, .com, and indeed a whole heap of other goodies. Of course, Great British Bake Off finalist extraordinaire. She should have won, I know. It's Holly Bell. How are you, Holly?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Well, I say this is fantastic. It ties in, obviously, with Freshers Week in certain universities, a whole range of things. National Cupcake Week, the 15th to the 21st of September. But some interesting results from this survey by Asda.
Yes, very interesting. Mm. Some people are faking it.
Unbelievable. I mean, a quarter of Brits have said that the Great British Bake Off obviously has inspired them to want to bake a cake. However, nearly 2 in 5 of us have bought pre-made pastry, ready-made cake mixers and cake decorating kits. Unbelievable. I mean, is it just a case of it's the time thing? I mean, does it boil down to that, or do people sort of say, well, let's just do something completely different?
I think it is the time thing, but I also think there's a slight lack of confidence that some people sort of see baking cakes and bread and pastry as a sort of, you know, it's this magical thing that happens, and they sort of, if they haven't learned it as a child, they think that they're not included in it and that they can't learn it. And actually, baking is one of those few pastimes actually that you can learn really quickly. And you know, it's a science at the end of the day. So as long as you've got a good recipe, you can sit down with it, make sure you read through it first and have a go. However, having said this, I'm absolutely not one of those people who sort of says, unless everything's made from scratch, it's not worth doing. Because, you know, we live in the real world. Some people don't have the time. So, you know, some people have got incredibly busy jobs and commitments. I really like the way that the French approach things, which is sometimes maybe buy half of it and make the other half. So cupcakes, buy some cupcakes. Maybe you ice them.
Well, interesting. I mean, I love the term con artisans, a study that shows nearly 1 in 10 of Brits admits to simply decorating shop-bought cupcakes, with 5% passing off ready-made cakes as their own.
Oh, I love that. It's so naughty. It's all a bit Bridget Jones, isn't it? It makes me giggle, the thought of someone bashing up the sides of some pastry and then throwing a bit of icing sugar on the top. But, you know, there's no shame in it. And I think, you know, we should almost stand up and be proud and say, yeah, okay, maybe I bought the pastry case or the cakes, but I put the stuff on the top, or I sort of, you know, garnished it. Why not? You know, I don't buy cakes, I'll be honest. I can't remember the last time I bought a cake, but I do buy bread. So, you know, we all do what we have to do, don't we?
Well, that makes sense. Now, I've got to refer to 6 fantastic cupcakes. As you refer to them in your Facebook page, these little chaps are coming with me to London tomorrow to celebrate National Cupcake Week. Have they survived the journey?
They have. They're sitting next to me right now.
Hurrah!
So, yeah, basically, last night I popped down to Asda and bought up most of the baking aisle. So I'm sorry to anyone in my local Asda. Sorry about that. And I thought, I'm going to make some cupcakes. So I made some very, very grown-up ones, which I haven't tweeted or Facebook the picture yet, but I'm going to do that in a minute. Mm-hmm. And they've got beautiful pink butterflies on, and they're all very grown up. And then I thought, actually, I'm going to make 6 children's cupcakes. So I've made one with a snail on, mm-hmm. one with a parrot, one with a mouse, and so on and so forth. I sat on the train this morning, and I sort of really should apologise to anyone who's on the train with me, because every time anyone walked past to try and go to the loo, I suddenly become a bit overprotective.
Yeah.
And try and, you know, shield my cakes.
Yeah, you got 3 children, you know, you've got to look after the cupcakes as well, Holly. It's important, you know.
Absolutely.
These are critical in every sense of the word. Funny enough, I thought one of them reminded me of a womble. I thought it was a bit Orinoco-like, actually.
Really?
Yes. And of course, Kermit. I got a suggestion of Kermit there for obvious reasons.
Oh,
for
that, yes.
But nicely put together. I mean, again,
thank you.
Very tasty. Just a word of caution. I do know those on-broadcast engineers are noted for actually going for the cupcakes. I think you might need to be a bit more protective than when you're on the train. Just a thought, you know.
It's a very good thought, actually. Yeah, I hadn't really thought. I thought I was home and dry, but maybe I'm not.
Well, they're fine souls, but who knows what could happen. Now, in terms of regional differences, we see that London and the Welsh consider themselves to be the most avid bakers, with a quarter of those who responded to this Asda survey saying they were baking. Back up in Yorkshire and the Humber, only 14%. North East, only 15%. Interesting that was, people in the South East are most likely to pop to the shops to buy ready-made treats. I suppose that kind of ties in with perceived pressures of work, perhaps.
Yeah, and I guess long commuting times, because when I worked in London, I only worked on one side and lived on the other side, and it sometimes used to take me over an hour just to get home. Whereas now I live up in Leicester, and I'm able to get into London in an hour and a quarter. So I guess, you know, when you think of how long people are probably spending on the tube and the train, maybe that's why they're sort of cutting corners in other areas. But, you know, like I say, I don't think there's anything wrong in it. When I used to have quite a full-on job, I used to use my weekends as more my time for doing scratch baking. And then I'd sort of go to town a little bit more. And in the week, I tended to buy more stuff. So, yeah.
One of the lines which is certainly going to be echoed by our weekly correspondent, William Sitwell, is that cooking should be fun, simple, inventive and inexpensive. It's fantastic stuff to actually sort of work through from that point of view. Got to ask you, Holly, when you actually won that Star Baker Award during Cupcake Week on Great British Bake Off, did you think, that's OK, or was just quietly confident all the way?
Do you know what? It was the first week, so not confident at all, because I basically thought, well, that means obviously I'm not going to be asked to leave. So that was my first big tick in my head, was good, I'm here for next week. Mm-hmm. My second worry was, and I am a worrier, I, you know, hold my hand up, I thought, does this mean that they'll slightly be after me next week?
Oh, dear.
Because there's a little bit, you'll watch, there's a theme on the Bake Off where this does slightly happen, that if someone does well, the next week they tend to get a bit more of a roasting. So... And I did.
Well, they were wrong, Holly. That's all I can say. You know, I mean, clearly you have transcended the whole thing now, and you are certainly to the baking industry what Paul Hollywood has been for many years, but I think in a different angle and much more sort of presentable in every sense of the word. recipes from a normal mum, .com is a fantastic go-to website. It's a blog site as well. A whole heap of other goodies there, plus tips on all sorts of things from that point of view. Are there any kind of key top baking tips you'd like to just share with us today? Possibly could also be applied to some of our listeners across the Atlantic in Los Angeles and beyond.
Right. Well, yes, I would say there are lots of great baking tips. One of my top tips is when you're baking cakes, make sure you get all of your ingredients to room temperature. Sounds very boring, but it is true. You'll get a much better cake, much less likely to curdle. So if you do keep your eggs in the fridge, then bring them to room temperature very quickly by putting them into a bowl of warm, not hot water. You don't want boiled eggs, but put it into a bowl of warm water, and that will, about 5 minutes, that will bring them to room temperature. Always preheat your oven fully. I'm an impatient soul, and I have been known to put cakes into the oven before the red light has gone off to say that it's fully preheated. You will pay for this, because with cakes, if you start off at a really low temperature and let the temperature sort of work up, you get a very, very slow bake, which basically makes it quite rubbery. OK, so don't do that. That's bad.
Absolutely. Not unless you want to actually sort of kick your cakes around the room as a kind of rubber ball thing.
Important. And that's not what they're for.
Precisely. Holly, I think that's fantastic. I mean, I must share that with our transatlantic correspondents. I'm sure they'll be sort of baking their cupcakes as we speak from that perspective. Two final questions today. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the midweek drive, sharing your thoughts on cupcakes for this wonderful National Cupcake Week?
I have enjoyed it very much. Thank you for having me.
Well, the next critical question, Holly, is can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again in the not-too-distant future and sharing more fantastic recipe treats, which I sense actually comes from both an understanding and appreciation of not just chemistry, but physics as well.
Absolutely.
Holly Bell will return. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
National Cupcake Week. Clearly one of those wonderful, exciting scenarios without which the world would not be the same. Would it, top critical correspondent Richard Fitzwilliams?
Reminded me of the prime of Miss Jean Brodie.
Everything does, Richard. Everything does.
Yes, she says to her class when there's a girl who ties knots, and she isn't particularly fond of this exercise. For those who like that sort of thing, that is the sort of thing they like.
Ooh!
Sleep that in there. We have to say good morning to John Wenham. Well, we don't have to, but we will in any case. Good morning, John Wenham.
Good morning to you.
Excellent.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, John.
John, sort of having busily sorted out his computers yesterday, completed another fantastic diary collection of events and such like stuff. I can actually just relax, chill out and take part in the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. And quite rightly so as well. The Invictus Games, Richard. A great success and something I gather you want to speak about briefly.
Well, I mean, I did want to mention that this was terrific because Harry had got the idea last year from the Warrior Games in the United States. And, I mean, in a few months... to organise it. 13 countries, 400 participants. I mean, it is fantastic, and what he's doing for charity really is impressive. His mother would indeed be proud, and I should be absolutely fascinated to see what he does next, because at the moment he's a staff officer he won't be behind a desk for long. I mean, his energy is so terrific. And when he goes abroad on behalf of the Queen, I mean, look what happened in Jamaica. And on a day when the word we won't mention the word referendum.
But you just have, Richard. What's going on? Outrageous.
He goes to Jamaica and Portia Simpson-Miller, the Prime Minister, had announced that they would hold a referendum on whether or not to have a republic, and no such thing has been held. And indeed, he beats Usain Bolt. That's sort of fun. I mean, that really was Harry clowning. He's got mischief. He's popular. He's had all these ups and downs over the years, and I mean, he'll always be a wild party animal. And I understand that he and Cressida Bonus are back together again. Now, that is really good news for today, because I always thought they'd be ideal. Ideal.
There we are, Harry and Cressida.
It's
truly wonderful. Or indeed, as we might say, I don't know if you can remember that particular voice, Richard, or indeed if you recognise that particular voice. But it's
It wasn't so much a voice as an unearthly shriek.
It was basically when ginger wine was being supped. It basically was. There we are. I'll just leave that for the moment in the sort of ether. See if people would like to text in studio@sarenonline.co.uk.
But what is the voice? I mean, there was a disembodied sound.
Disembodied sound? You say this is a disembodied sound?
Ooh.
That's outrageous. Never mind. Where do we want to go in terms of filmic choices and selections this week, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, we want to go firstly to Pride, and this is a British film which is extremely good and has had superb reviews, directed by Matthew Warkas, and the writer is Stephen Beresford, and they deserve credit for bringing a true story to the screen. This is, it touches the heart, it's also hard-edged, and it is about the lesbians and gays who support the minors, who supported the minors during the miner strike in 1984. And activists from London take their donations directly to a Welsh village where they have, as you might expect at that period, after all 30 years ago, a rather mixed reception, certainly to begin with. And it is a very touching film, and it's got some superb performances. Bill Nye, for example, as Cliff, as one of the union officials, and Imelda Staunton, bustling and feisty as Hafina, and some extremely good performances from the gay and lesbian activists. It's really very, very touching.
Is it channeling the particular vibe that obviously led the British film The Full Monty to such success? Is it that kind of I won't say Ealing comedy for the teenies, but is it that area, or is it more hard-hitting than that?
It is more hard-hitting than The Four Weddings, Full Monty, Notting Hill type films. For one thing, it equates the battle of the miners against Thatcher government to the homophobia of that particular era. And at that period, the horrors of AIDS were hitting gay communities very hard. Also, visually, it's impressive. You have the fact that the strike lasted almost exactly a year, and you've got some very, very touching personal stories. It's in the second half that the film really came alive to me. And, I mean, we've got Dominic West, a flamboyant performance, and Ben Schnitzer as the leader of the activists, as Mark, very good indeed, and a touching personal odyssey by George Mackay as Joe, also Faye Marsay as Steph, the lesbian. It's one of those movies that ticks all the right boxes, but it does so in a touching way. You could argue that certain scenes are contrived, but there aren't many, and I was very impressed. The sort of film that could very easily be sentimental, perhaps far too sentimental, and it isn't. It's, as I say, you've got this hard edge to it that does make it somewhat different from The Full Monty, though that too, of course, with unemployment, had something similar. But it is in a tradition of British film where you've got some superb character actors, and also you've got, as I say, some very touching, very moving personal stories, and it's against the canvas of a strike. You get documentary footage that reminds you of that, and also the AIDS plague, HIV/AIDS plague.
John Wenham, you're probably too young to remember 1984.
I can remember, and I can bring to mind two films that were about the miners' strikes or the closing of mines. One is that classic one, Brassed Off, which I with Pete Postlethwaite.
And Ewan McGregor.
And Ewan McGregor. Mm. And Tara Fitzgerald.
Of course.
And the other one was, of course, the lovely Billy Elliot.
There we are, you see.
Marvellous films, absolutely, yes.
So, and of course, were you in Nottingham umpiring cricket at the time, John?
I wasn't in Nottingham.
No, I
was. I was mad. I'd taken a break from umpiring at the time.
Is that possible? I thought, surely cricket and umpire.
I was married with a young daughter at the time, so.
You see, that's what we're looking for, actually, Richard, the John Wenham life story. It's definitely sort of the line there. The Tales from the Stumps, I think.
Oh, my goodness me. I mean, you're making it sound... That's a takeoff from Tales from the Crypt.
Ah, well, you know...
you're in mischievous mood this morning.
Oh, please.
Might be even the Tales of the Unexpected.
Oh, I think Roald Dahl co-owned that one. Okay, Pride, definitely thumbs up from your good self. Where else do you wish to take us, Richard?
Well, we go, in fact, to Woody Allen. His latest movie, Magic in the Moonlight, and I mean, this is an absolutely delightful film. The movies can and certainly should be magical, and this is a wondrous example of a romantic comedy which really succeeds. And I have to say, I didn't know a thing about it before I went to see it, because it's lovely that way, if that's possible. There's so many spoilers around, it's sometimes difficult to even read about a film without being told important elements of its plot. It begins in Berlin in 1928, and here we have Colin Firth playing Stanley, and he's a world famous illusionist. He's rude to his admirers, he's rude to others on the stage. Nonetheless, he egotistical he may be, but he's got an old friend, Howard, played by the ever reliable Simon McBurney. And Howard is a friend and a fellow illusionist, and he persuades Stanley to accompany him to the Côte d'Azur, because there's a rich American family, the Cappleges, who've been taken in by a clairvoyant Sophie, played by the gorgeous and delightful Emma Stone. Howard says that, in his opinion, Sophie's incredible, but Stanley is somebody who, well, for life, has got to be rational and logic, and, well, as for clairvoyance, like religion, it's tosh and nonsense. He wants Howard to Stanley to expose Sophie. And what happens? He gets attracted, he gets fascinated, and there are various twists and turns in this plot. The less you know of that, the better. But
we shall say nothing other than to actually bring to mind Rotten Tomatoes review, or Rotten Tomatoes to be precise if we're talking about our transatlantic listeners. The critics' consensus: while far from a failure, Magic in the Moonlight is too slow.
A good performance by Colin Firth, and yes, I read it, and I was disappointed.
Too slight to stand with Woody Allen's finest work.
Let's be...
I would say Sleeper, clearly. Yeah, that has to be his finest, you know.
I think it's delightful. I think that the those who reviewed it in a cynical way, well, they were in the wrong mood. I loved it. Eileen Atkins, for example, as Stanley's Aunt Vanessa. Mm. Wonderful performance. But what fascinated me particularly was Colin Firth. It's a Henry Higgins-style role. I don't want to give away too much, but the facts are that he certainly shows remarkable vocal range and also a selection of moods. It works. This is
and the
whole
question,
thing.
Of course, Richard, is it Stanley Crawford or is it Wei Ling Su?
Well, the thing is, it's got a wonderful cast. It's got Woody Allen directing in top form. It's got Eileen Atkins, Colin Firth, Emma Stone, and
Hamish Linklater.
McBurney.
Amazing.
Delightful. I was swept up. And also, delightful period feel set in the late 1920s with an appropriate music, a script that I was amused. I was touched.
Richard,
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I can see that it's moved you as much as Australia with Nicole Kidman did.
Right. Mischievous giving. given
John Wenham, when's the last most monstrous
comparison? That is
gross. I'll fade your microphone down, Richard, if you're not behaving. You know, this sort of thing.
I recommend Magic in the Moonlight to anyone who enjoys that sort of thing.
John, when was the last time you went to the cinema?
Oh, it must be 2 or 3 years ago.
Outrageous.
Now.
From yes. what Richard just said.
Scandalous.
It
I
is.
Mean, it's just pride and magic in the moonlight.
He celebrated 75 years on the planet last week, and he's, you know, you should anyway, perhaps that's probably moving on.
Oh, my goodness me, are you cruelty? Well, this is a theatre of cruelty.
Pride or Magic in the Moonlight, which one or both would you be tempted to see, or will you be waiting until they're available on DVD or other such ways?
Well, that's how I do get most of my films is on DVD. Right. I mean, the likes of The King's Speech and uh-huh. things like that. Yeah. It's always comes the King of Scotland.
What? Beautiful. The Last King of Scotland. Oh, yes, yeah. I mean, that's a very good film. You mentioned The King's Speech, of course, which had Colin Firth in, and we saw last week, you know, we were talking about Before I Go to Sleep, also a rather good performance by Colin Firth, and Nicole Kidman doing her best to claw back her admirers after certain horrors.
Hey, Grace and Australia, what a double whammy that would be to celebrate life. Anyway.
Yes, don't sing over the rainbow, whatever you do.
So, no. Too much. I'm sure we can actually work on that. But anyway, would you be tempted to go and book out either of those two, John, on the basis of Richard's recommendation?
I could do if I have time. I certainly would do, yes.
You spend so much time slaving quite literally over the John Wenham Weekly Diary and events, what's on set up.
I do other things as well.
Really?
Yes.
It's amazing. It's just revelations in every sense of the word. So I think we managed to get through that without talking about the fact that next week, Richard, it'll be the former United Kingdom or the remainder of the United Kingdom. I won't use an acronym in either of those cases for obvious reasons.
It would appear very likely it would appear from the polls, and it would appear from what those, for example, who were at a media society gathering yesterday evening. So Nick Ferrari asked who believes it's going to be yes in the referendum in Scotland. Only two people out of a crowded room thought it was going to be yes, but we aren't Scots and we aren't north of the border. I mean, it does appear that way, but our lives will be rather different. If it happens to be yes, I don't believe so, and I hope, I really, really, really hope that it isn't.
There we have it. Okay, an interesting line there, as always. As we don't have a vote, so we'll just see what sort of happens and what develops. In fact, one of our semi-regular co-presenters, the Pro-Vice-Chancellor of the University of Lincoln, Scott Davidson, has actually written quite an extensive blog entry in terms of how, as he's living sort of across the border or has family in both areas, he thinks it's outrageous that we've had so many shortcuts circumnavigating constitution, like suddenly giving 16-year-olds the vote, like providing sort of votes for certain vote, not others, etc. It could be
when you've been out of Scotland for over a year, you can't, if you own property in Scotland but you're not resident there, you can't. There are a whole variety of things that are outrageous, and those are two of the least of them.
However, let us move on and progress. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have indeed.
That's a good start. That's very good from that point of view. Because still to come, we'll be talking to Katie Grimerson, who was originally due to be launching at 8 a.m., but she sent me a text, curiously, around about 3 or 4 o'clock this morning, saying, can I do a later slot? I thought, well, I'll wait until she's actually asleep, then I'll send a reply back. And then she responded instantly saying, yeah, that's okay then. So, you know, who knows what she's doing in Birmingham these days. But we'll probably find out about that and a whole heap of other goodies as well. I presume you haven't progressed any further in identifying the little 2-second sound blast that we actually shared with you a few seconds in terms of the ooh, Richard.
Well, how could I? You're controlling it in the studio. Your contorted sounds. They are bizarre. What does it mean?
Contorted sounds.
Yes, it's a cacophony. It's a horrible thing. What is it?
it's the sort of sound that was actually made at a tasting session actually at the North of England Horticultural Society's Autumn Flower Show. I don't know if that helps at all, Richard.
Well, it's a noise. What is it?
It's a noise. Well, it surely it says it exactly. It's exactly.
It's a distortion. It's a sound distortion.
No, it is not a sound distortion. I can hand on my heart.
Come on,
it is quite clearly.
Richard
Fitzwilliams, will you return next week? We'll tell you then.
Well, I will be returning from Paris. I'm going over rather excitingly for the European Heritage Days, where I'm looking forward to seeing some of the famous buildings.
Ooh!
If you book your tickets in advance for a mere £22.50, you can go and see that particular band, Ian Hunter, of course the leader of Mott the Hoople, all the way from Memphis, performing at the Lincoln Drill Hall on Sunday the 21st of September. Isn't that very exciting, John?
Yes, exactly.
Ian Hunter, widely revered as one of rock and roll's most compelling performers, as well as one of its most articulate songwriters, as author of such immortal anthems such as the one we just heard, All the Way from Memphis, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, Cleveland Rocks, All the Young Dudes, etc. He remains a hero to fellow musicians and fans around the world, whilst his achievements during his first decade as a recording artist would have been more than enough to ensure his iconic status. Ian Hunter has never been one to coast on past glories, which is very, very important, particularly when we actually lead up to the next co-presenter. Cue the jingle.
Katie G is a VIP. She's Birmingham's gift to the galaxy. Always found at the top of the tree. Let's hear it up now for Katie G.
Yeah, Katie Grimerson, welcome back aboard. You thought we'd got rid of that little Katie G number, didn't you?
Well, I did.
We thought we'd bring it back just for today, because obviously it's Birmingham's gift to the galaxy. It's very important that is obviously maintained throughout the whole sort of system. Katie, obviously, Siren has not been the same since she decided to up sticks, graduate and actually base herself in Birmingham.
No. How are you, Katie?
I'm good. Bit weird not going back to uni, but I'm slowly adjusting to it.
Yeah, you kind of go through a decompression system for a wee while and then get it sorted out.
It's Freshers Week, though, now, and I'm not there.
Well, that is a very capable and sanguine observation. And, you know, a lot of freshers have been coming up to us and saying, where's Katie Grimerson? And I have to say, tuned in. They're waiting for your moments. They're thinking, what's going to happen? Where's she gone? What's sorted through on that basis? But no, don't worry. Katie hasn't really just left us. She's kind of still here in spirit, in a kind of ethereal thing. Katie, would you like to chat with John about life, the universe, cricket, of course, at Edgbaston, which I know you're a keen fan, because we also know, I don't know if you knew, John, but Katie was quite a keen cricketing follower as well. Did you realise that?
I did not realise that. How are you, Katie? How's your season gone this season?
What, with Warwickshire? It's gone really good because we won this 2020.
Yes, I know. It's good performances.
So I was quite happy about that.
Yes. Did you manage to get to see many matches?
No, not really, because I've only just got back into cricket again, because I used to go to Edgbaston all the time, then I stopped going, but I'm going to start going again next year, and I really want to go and watch some international matches as well again.
Yes, well, I went over to Trent Bridge and saw the a day of the last Test match against India, which was very interesting.
I love it. I saw South Africa at Edgbaston. I think that was the last one I went to.
Yes.
And it was just amazing. Such an amazing atmosphere. And, it was electrifying.
Right. I'm going to do a cricket quiz sometime. So we'll have to get in touch and sort of see how it goes. If you've got any questions you would like to do.
It could actually quite literally be Katie's cricketing questions.
It could be.
The sort of K sounds there in different letters, but still Katie's cricketing questions. It's a different line. Something to work upon. Okay, moving on. Katie, it's time to actually wear your musical hat, of course, because I know you do blogging and various other factors within there. And as you're well aware, Cameron Tilbury always brings a magical piece of music for exposure to the world every Wednesday on the Midweek Drive, which we usually do a reprise of on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. This week he's brought along Sarah Smith with her first solo outing, a need to know, or I need to know. Are you ready, Katie, for Sarah Smith and I Need to Know on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM as we approach 22 minutes to 9 a.m. in the morning? Are you set for this, Katie?
Yeah, go on then.
The fact that you're leaving isn't hard to
We do. We need to know what Katie Grimmison made of I Need to Know by Sarah Smith. What did you make of it, Katie?
I thought it was really nice. I feel like it had some kind of meaning behind it because obviously I've left Lincoln, so I liked it.
and you need to know why. And it's, you know, because that's part of the huge, wonderful adventure that we're actually on in every sense of the word. Katie, we've got another little tune coming up in a few seconds, but we've been putting this particular question to a number of our fine folk, etc., and we've identified that it isn't your good self who actually came out with this little noise.
Ooh.
But do you know who it might have been?
No,
that doesn't sort of strike you as a familiar...
Ooh.
Not really.
Okay, well, we'll think about that. I'm going to be pulling up details in the studio, so John Wenham will at least be able to identify who was actually making that particular exciting little noise. And when, of course, well, actually, we've said when. In fact, I'll just there we are, John. Can you see that from that point of view? Now, actually, just as that was actually being taken, what actually happened was we suddenly got. There we are, you see. Which just shows the efficacious nature of good quality ginger wine. Moving on, Katie, are you ready for... Well, do you remember Rebecca Poole, of course, who was an ace?
Yeah, so,
yeah. Well, she's now, of course, got a whole new career under the name Purdy. P-U-R-D-Y. She's got another little track that's out now. It's called Next Time. We'll be speaking to Purdy on the Midweek Drive next week, as well as Ken Dodd. Yes, we missed him last week, but Ken Dodd is back. Isn't that exciting, John?
Yes, I saw Ken last time he was in Lincoln.
Yeah, well, there we are. He remembers that, Ken, and he'll be sort of speaking about your good self. In fact, I'll mention it on Wednesday when we speak to him. What was Katie?
I had a message off Penny Evans last night, and she said that she thought I was on the Midweek Drive next week, but I said, well, no, I do weekly links on the morning one. She must have got mixed up, but did you say that I was going to be on or something?
Katie, I said that you were going to be on, and I always will actually trail ahead if possible. That's important, you know, because it's what we do. It kind of gives folk the opportunity to just sort of take that whole thing by. Penny, of course, we hope is well on the way to recovery. She'll probably be listening to this as a podcast because she said herself yesterday she felt like a zombie. But never mind. That's okay. We hopefully sort of left her out of the undead and brought her into life and the universe and various other things. So, yeah. And obviously, Penny, as you know, is one of your biggest fans, Katie. Anyway, moving on. Would you like Purdy or would you like some Ken Dodd? It's up to yourself, Katie. What would you like for a little musical treat to kind of help wake you up in Birmingham and enable you to start the world in a positive way and actually say, yes, world, this is my time?
I'll go for Ken Dodd.
Really? So even though Purdy's singing Next Time and she's sorted to, she's all set to, you know, launch into that nice little easygoing system, etc., you've said no. That's okay. I won't obviously share that with Purdy when she joins us next week, but never mind. That's okay. So you've gone for Ken Dodd. I'm amazed you actually, you do know who Ken Dodd is then, Katie.
I do.
It's amazing. You know, it's wonderful. So that's sort of through there. Well, anyway, Tickling Sticks at the ready, and indeed Naughty Ash, which I don't think has declared any kind of independence as yet, but it's a question I might well put to Mr. Dodd for the next week, because you know, those Diddy men could declare independence and maybe take over parts of Erdington.
Happiness, happiness, the greatest gift that I possess. I thank the Lord that I've been blessed with
Katie Grimmison, Birmingham's gift to the galaxy on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM and more.
Oh. Okay, moving on. In terms of the Lincoln Theatre Royal, the Houghton Weavers are coming to town on Thursday, the 25th of September, which is actually a week today, in fact, John.
Yes, good.
The way you compile this diary so it actually works a week in advance, it's very impressive. Lots of people have difficulty with that sort of time machine, but there we are. Over the past three decades, the Houghton Weavers have released over 30 albums, numerous DVDs, and have many radio and television appearances to their credit, including their own series, Sit Thee Down. The Houghton Weavers consist of Tony Berry, lead singer and frontman, David Littler on guitar, banjo, mandolin and vocals, and Steve Millington on keyboards, guitar, bass, banjo, ukulele, mandolin, accordion and vocals. Sounds as though Katie should really be doing a review of them, really, because they could almost be the Broken Mitt Biscuits setup, or Broken Wit
Biscuits. Broken Wit Rebel!
Yeah, well, you know, something like that. I'm sure it's all sorted through there. I still think they should change the name to Broken Biscuits. It's a lot more sort of user-friendly.
No,
she's fighting on the Broken with Rebels cause, you know, and still will maintain that. But the Houghton Weavers could actually be an interesting line. So, what will you be doing? When's your next review, Katie? And how can people access your reviews and blog details online?
Well, my very first review actually for Birmingham Live is going to be the 29th of September, and the 28th, and I'm going to be going at a gig for a band called Sleepy Sun.
Sleepy
Sun. And it's really exciting because I can't wait to get to review, because I get a professional photographer going with me because I only provide the content, and then it's just going to be really packed full of gigs the next couple of months, actually.
Oh, where are you, sir? And that, because your media commitments, it's all go, isn't it, John?
It's all go. Gosh, sometimes I wish I was in your shoes, Katie.
probably a bit small for you,
bit
John.
Small,
you
know, for me,
very petite, is Katie. You know, it's not. You know, it's not. I mean, I'm not suggesting you're clodhoppers, of course, John. But you know, maybe just a wee bit thing, but in a metaphysical way, yeah. Anyway, life continues. Coming up on the programme this morning, we'll be speaking to Stephanie Moon. Of course, who we connected with at the NEHS Autumn Flower Show. We'll find out the source of the ooh sound. In a marvellous way. Who actually sort of ruled that. John Gerald is talking briefly about his shift southernwards again from the Lincolnshire area. John Gerald, of course, literary agent. And Annette Andre will be joining us, because Annette is in the country. She's in London. She'll be actually performing at the Westminster Hall in London on Saturday this week. Who knows? We might still be able to sort of get her up to Lincoln, but she is live in London, so Annette Andre's audio missive will be in the second part of the programme. Plus, of course, William Sitwell will be back with us. So will you be tuned into that, Katie, or is it a case of, I've got better things to do?
I might tune into, or I might listen to a bit of Lana Del Rey.
Well, there we are, you see. Just
say no more.
Exactly. Tune into the show or listen to a bit of Lana Del Rey. It's not a strapline I necessarily want to go for. Anyway, Katie, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yeah, I have, as always.
Take you back with us in the near future?
Yeah, of course I will.
Do you?